Welcome to another conversation with SYD Life. I'm Tyler Ancliffe, and today we're joined by Lisa Maltman, founder of The Sleep Connection, talking on how we can improve our lives through healthy sleep. Welcome, Lisa.
Yay, thank you. So great to be here.
It's good to have you.
Thank you.
So sleep, it's probably one of the biggest things that we often do not talk about.
Yep.
But is if it's good, it's good. And if it's bad,
you don't feel great.
It's really bad.
Yes.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
So tell me, let's start from the get-go. How did you first get into this? What's the background? What's the heart behind it?
All right. Do you want the short version or the long version? I'll try and give you the short version.
Give me the in-between, yeah.
So I started The Sleep Connection about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I love going into corporations, but the majority of my work is in schools with students, staff and parents. And the message behind it is joining the sleep. The name is The Sleep Connection, recognizing the connection of sleep between our physical health, our mental health and our performance.
Yeah.
So when I share that message, I share it from three different perspectives. The first is from a professional perspective, which I'll get into in a little while.
Mm.
The second is from a family perspective. As you know, I've got daughters who are 18 and 21. When I started that, they were much younger. And I remember reading a survey to do with teenage wellbeing. And one of the key reasons they said that they argue with their parents is lack of sleep. I'm going, well, let's get that message out there because that's something that we can remove from families' pressure. And then the third perspective is from a personal perspective of someone about 8 years ago. I had really, really chronic insomnia to the stage that I thought I was going completely mad.
Wow.
So I love sharing that so that at the end of, you know, when I run a presentation, people can feel free to ask questions from any three of those perspectives.
Yeah.
And with the insomnia, a lot of things were going on in my world. So I had really chronic insomnia and then some friends were going through a really tragic situation and I was getting phone calls in the middle of the night and then it just absolutely peaked. So it was not a fun period. So from a professional perspective, I used to work in the area of adult sleep apnea.
Okay.
And it was there that I started to realise the impact of poor sleep on some of the key issues in Australia. So health issues like depression, diabetes, heart disease. And actually, sleep in Australia costs the economy $50 billion a year. So it's a huge issue. I did decide, though, to move from that corporate area into schools when I recognised that our teens are the most sleep-deprived of all our generations. So
yeah, I've read a stat on one of your papers that it's up to 70% of our teens are not having
sufficient sleep.
Sufficient sleep.
Yeah, which is huge. And when you're seeing the rise in... obviously, it's impacting their learning, but when you're seeing the rise in mental health, we need to get that message across about sleep and mental health, which I'll go into in a moment.
Very connected.
And then there was something else that really hit me was I watched a video of a little boy. He was 10 years old called Connor, and he was at school and he'd been misdiagnosed with ADHD and oppositional defiance disorder. And one of the most common things he would say to his mum is, "I just want to die." So I could just remember watching this video just bawling, going, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And it turned out that he had his tonsils and adenoids in the way, so he wasn't breathing properly at night, so he basically had sleep apnea himself. And what that means is you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain, so you're thinking you're getting a good quality or the right amount of sleep, but it's not great quality sleep. You're being brought out of your deep sleep all the time.
Right.
So we're all on a scale of 1 to 10, how much sleep we're getting. He was just off the scale, and his most common thing you would say is, "I just want to die." And so I can just remember going, wow, something needs to be done about that. And so since then I've just heard so many parents' stories, similar sort of stories of seeing professionals being treated for the wrong thing until they find the answer. So,
it does make you wonder how many like misdiagnoses there are.
Yep.
And things like ADHD are skyrocketing.
Yep.
Self-diagnosis or by professional.
Yep.
And it makes you wonder, is it is there actually an underlying thing of sleep.
Relating,
And
when we get tired, we tend to retreat. And whereas when children, younger children are tired, they tend to become overactive, unable to focus. So it's a different perspective when young children are tired.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's amazing. You're doing amazing work.
Thank you.
I love that you say healthy sleep. It's not just sleep.
Yep.
You could be getting your eight.
Yep.
But if the quality's not there.
Had a few beverages the night before.
Yeah.
Not so great quality sleep. I'll go into that later, but don't shoot the messenger on that one.
You got a baby.
Beverage, alcohol, yes.
Okay, so, you know, why do we need sleep? Firstly, just...
Very big question.
What's it do for us?
So we sleep for about a third of our lives, so we want to make sure that it does lots for us because we're giving up a third of our life to sleep. And I always talk about using the quality of the third of our life sleeping to improve the quality of the two thirds that were awake. So in terms of our physical health, mental health and performance are those three key areas. So the impact on our physical health, so in terms of children, the impact on their immune system, their growth. Yep. So when they're not getting enough sleep, their brain and bodies aren't getting that growth hormone they need when they sleep. Impact on weight and what we eat. And also beauty sleep. It does occur. So when we get a great night's sleep, our hormones, even our blood flow comes to our skin and we just tend to look and feel a whole lot better.
Amazing.
So often when I talk to students, I go, what would motivate you to improve your sleep? And that is the key question. What's going to motivate you to improve?
There you go. That's, I mean, that's a myth busted for me.
Yep.
I thought beauty sleep was a...
No, it's not.
A false motivator. Oh, there you go. Maybe I'll tell myself when I'm doom scrolling at night before I go to sleep.
And then with adults, as I said in my introduction, the impact on, you know, our blood sugar levels, our heart, brain diseases such as Alzheimer's. So that's the physical side in terms of the performance. Obviously, our work performance, we're a lot more motivated when we've had a great night's sleep.
Yep.
We're more creative. We make better decisions. Decisions are made when we're sleep deprived.
Yeah, even I find just the ability to be present as well.
Yes, totally.
And, you know, it really doesn't matter what work you're doing. If you're not present, you're not going to be productive or effective or giving your best.
Yep.
And it's a, personally, I find a pretty horrible feeling to not be present.
Yep.
Your eyes go blurry. It's like that fog sets in.
Yep.
And it is, I feel that's the biggest sign of sleep deprivation in my life. So.
Not being motivated, you say, not being present, and even our empathy levels. There's actually really clear studies looking at our empathy levels. So depending what your work is, if you're a teacher, like I talk to lots of teachers, if that empathy level and relationship building isn't there, then that's really impacted. So, and in relation to our children's learning performance, huge impact. So we need a great night's sleep both before and after learning. So before learning, so that information goes into their brain. And then after learning, so that, same if we're studying as well, that information gets processed, consolidated and stored. So often we think, oh, when we're asleep, our brain's not doing much. We're just recouping. But in fact, everything that we've learned during the day actually gets processed, consolidated and stored while we're asleep. And some parts of our sleep, our brains are actually busier than when we're awake, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah.
So basically sleep is absolutely essential.
Yes.
And without it, almost every area of our life is detrimentally impacted.
When we don't get enough sleep, two parts of our brain are impacted. So the first part is our logical part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, in case anyone cares. But that's the logical part. And when we don't get enough sleep, that part of the brain actually dims down. So it's not working as effectively, which means we don't make the same decisions or think logically. And then the opposite happens in our emotional part of the brain. So the logical dims down and the emotional overreacts.
Right.
So if I ask a group of people, whether it's staff or whether it's students, how do you feel when you don't get enough sleep? I feel moody, I feel cranky. Yeah,
snappy.
The majority of the answers will be related to this area.
Yep.
And I feel more depressed. And then over a period of time, those two parts of the brain don't talk very well together.
Yeah,
so we tend to think more negatively than positively when we don't get enough sleep.
That's amazing. So if you're constantly having either very low sleep or bad quality of sleep, it conditions your brain to be
more negative.
Set in those.
Yep.
Wow.
So you think about even just one night's sleep, you tend to the negative a bit. So if we're thinking that over a period of time and if we think we've got
around
70% of teens not getting enough sleep and probably 4 out of 10 adults and we've got a rise in anxiety and depression, then we need to start getting this message out there because this is something that we can do something about. When we don't get enough sleep, the next day we have higher levels of our cortisol, which is our stress hormone.
Okay.
And I always say that stress actually plays a really good role in our life when we've got just the right amount, like that optimal performance level.
The Goldilocks amount.
Yes. And then what can quickly flip you from positive stress to negative stress is low sleep. So the next day you'll have high levels of cortisol going around in your body. So you feel more anxious and stressed and overwhelmed about things that normally you wouldn't care about.
Yeah.
So if you think that becomes a cycle as well between the lack of sleep, And then if you're more anxious, then that's harder to go to sleep in that whole cycle. And then, as you said, all the other contributors.
You're just constantly feeling overwhelmed,
that
basically.
Cycle.
Okay, so what do you think from your experience are some of the major things that are contributing to a bad night's sleep?
So I've got a book here, Dr. Matthew Walker. It's called Why We Sleep. And he looks at sort of the overall, he's a neuroscientist, a psychologist and a sleep expert. He's got the whole gamut. So he's just talked about the impact of sleep on pretty much every cell of our body. So if you don't want that much detail, then, you know, stick
I'll
to just
to
the
you.
Positive part. But he talks about the long-term things. So I'll talk about what contributes to lack of sleep from a long-term perspective, but also then what individuals are saying to me. So I don't love the analogy of the frog in boiling water, but it's a good analogy for this. So if you think about just some of the overall, this is from his book. So why are we not getting enough sleep? So there's 5 points he covers. One is to do with light. So we've got a lot more light than we used to. So if you think if you go camping, there's not much light, you often fall asleep earlier.
Like artificial light.
You get a lot better sleep. So over time, over a long time, we've got a lot more light. Obviously, we've got a lot of light coming from our phones. And we've got that tech impact, which I'll talk about separately. We then have access to technology. So he talks about the second one is that busy lifestyle and porous borders about work and home life. So, you know, back when I was young, we were only allowed to watch ABC. So there's only so much that you could watch. That's care of my English parents. So there's only a few comedies that you had a choice to watch, whereas now we've got a choice to watch a lot of things but also bring work back home. So we don't finish off work. We're often working till late
at
night.
Yes.
So then he talks about stress and anxiety, you know, is increasing. Alcohol and caffeine, we've got more access to those. And as I said before, I will talk about the impact of alcohol and caffeine towards the end. And as I said, don't shoot the messenger on those. And then what I think is really key is he talks about there being a sleep stigma. So he talks about that in developed world, sleep is strongly associated with weakness. So I'll read out what he says. He says, we've stigmatized sleep with a label of laziness.
Wow, interesting.
We want to seem busy. And one way we express that is by proclaiming how little sleep we're getting. It's a badge of honor. And then he says, we chastise people for sleeping what are, after all, only sufficient amounts. We think of them as slothful. And I love this. He goes, no one would look at a baby and say, what a lazy baby. We know that sleeping is non-negotiable for a baby, but that notion is quickly abandoned once we grow up. And he says, humans are the only species that deliberately deprive themselves of sleep for no reason. So those are sort of the overall long ones, the fact that we've got more light, work, stress, and that alcohol and caffeine and the sleep stigma. But probably when I speak to audiences, as I said, a lot of it's with students but also some staff sessions, one of the top ones will be technology, particularly with students. A lot will talk about increased work, school and homework, that busy lifestyle, that overstimulated brain, that brain that just doesn't switch off. And we tend to treat our brains and bodies a bit like a machine and we think, oh, we'll just switch it off when we want. And for some people that happens and they look at you and go, well, that's what I do. I put my head in the pillow and I go to sleep. But for way too many people, there's just stuff buzzing around their brains and they just can't switch that off.
We'll
so some people
that.
Can't sleep. Alcohol and caffeine. And then sleep disorders. So there are around 80 sleep disorders. Don't worry. I won't share all those with you. Probably the two most common would be insomnia.
So can't sleep.
Either difficulty falling asleep, waking up in the middle of the night or waking up really early. And sleep apnea, as I said. And then hormonal changes, so menopause, just different impacts from hormones. And, of course, babies. Tell us how your sleep's going.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, to all the young parents out there, take my hat off. So it's because I guess that is the other thing, like you said, for I guess for older women, things like menopause are coming in. So there are seasons in life where things change. So for us, I mean, a somewhat depressing thing we have to resign to is for the next couple years, decade possibly.
Years.
Well, depends how many kids we have. This is going to be a factor for us. So, I mean, there were months where, especially for my wife, it was like a lot of disrupted sleep. And it's The funny thing is, I think there was moments when our daughter was 5, 6 months old.
Yep.
When we turned to each other and we're like, oh, I thought we'd be so through much this. More tired. Yep. Oh, well, oh, right. more okay. tired.
Yep.
But what we didn't realize is it was the compounding effect of it.
Yep.
So the conversations quickly started to change more around the like 9, 10 months of the compounded breaking of sleep
yep.
or chunks of sleep through the night where our daughter's just like ready for a party at yeah, 2 in the morning for, yep. for 3 hours. So it like something had to change for us because people, you can't live like there. That.
Yep.
And then again, like we need to be functional and operational during the day. We both work, yep. we volunteer in different spaces as well. And we can't be zombies.
Yep.
So yeah, there's definitely seasons of life where there will be things that are out of your control to a degree, which can really impact sleep.
Yep. Yep.
Is my 2 cents. Okay, so going back a few steps
yep.
to if one of the common denominators is we're not winding down properly.
Yes.
What is a good pre-sleep routine?
Yep. Signaling to the brain that it's sleep time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even dimming lights, especially if you've got children, just dimming mm-hmm. lights. Because light is something that, you know, says to our brain, oh, it must be daytime. So
yes.
lowering the lights, doing something relaxing, not doing things right up until you go to bedtime. Yeah, doing relaxing things, basically.
Yep.
yep. And signalling to the brain that it's bedtime. So with your children, you may even need for a while to set alarm that's a nice noise just to get them to start doing that wind down. We do it in the morning to give yes. us that half an hour to or however long we take yes. to get ready. In the morning, so sometimes that's good to do that at night because often we're doing so much as a family. Mm. There's so many extracurriculars, there's lots going on.
Mm.
May even need to set an alarm to say, okay, let's start winding down.
Yeah, okay.
Signal to the brain, you know, even brushing teeth, all those basic things actually signal to the brain, oh, it's actually time to go to sleep.
Yeah. So doing relaxing things.
Yep.
But like not on a screen. Is that kind
it
of...
It can be. It just, if you're doing something really engaging like gaming.
Yeah.
Waiting for that little dopamine hit, that's probably not a good idea, okay. but it's okay to do more low-key things.
Yeah.
Watching television's fine and
okay.
it depends what your... So, for example, I won't watch the news before I go to bed because that for me is...
the stress.
Yeah, exactly. So it's whatever's okay for you.
Yeah.
Not engaging, not...
but some MasterChef goes all right.
Well, maybe. Maybe, yes.
That's my...
For most people.
I love some good old MasterChef.
Yeah. A comedy for me is the best.
Yep. I think we know these things
yep.
deep down inside.
Yes.
Whether we're doing them every yes. night is a different
yep.
Question.
Yes. And we need to help our children with that because
yeah.
for them it's totally normal. They've lived with their phones from your age groups. Your children have lived with them since they were born.
Yeah.
So it's totally normal, but it's not normally.
Introduced technology, yeah.
It's not normal to be attached to this thing all day. Mm. So we need to help them with that.
Yeah. And really lead in that area as well.
Yep.
I think that's something I constantly feel like, ooh, is my daughter going to grow up
yep.
just seeing me on my phone all the yep. time?
Yes.
And it's crazy. She's not even 1 yet.
Yep.
But we'll see her like grab our phones and put it to her ear and
yep.
I'm like, I don't even talk on the phone that much, but yes, she's picking these things up.
Yep.
And loves, you know, tapping the phone and
yes.
taking some videos. Like, is there anything else you wanted to say on how technology impacts our sleep?
Yep. So I guess it impacts for a couple of reasons. So yep. firstly, it's just a displacement of time. So it steals our time. So we might be thinking we're about to go to sleep. We'll be on it for 5 minutes. Half an hour later, we're still on it.
Oh, yes.
So it simply steals your time.
Been there before, yeah.
Secondly, the blue light impact. So are you yeah. aware that your phone emits blue light?
Yes, most of the time.
Yes.
It can switch, but
yes.
I'm sure it's still not great.
So there are ways of reducing the blue light.
Yeah.
But if you are holding your phone up to your face or whatever device it might
yeah.
be for a reasonable length of time just
yeah.
before bedtime, then what that signals to the brain is, oh, it's a lot of light coming into my brain. It must be daytime.
Mm.
So you've heard of melatonin?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so melatonin
yep.
is your very own sleepy hormone.
Great.
And that gets switched on about an hour before you want to go to sleep. And then
okay.
that builds up into the brain to the stage you can't fight it anymore and you just have to fall asleep.
Yep.
So that's sitting there in your brain. But when you're on your phone, then that blue light goes into your brain and says to that melatonin, why are you here? It's daylight.
Yeah.
So for some people it can reduce the amount of sleepy hormone,
yeah,
making it harder for you to fall asleep or even impact the quality of sleep. Mm. Then you've got the device activity content that we were talking about before, or even the state of flow that gamer developers and social media developers have helped us with, those pings and those rewards.
Yes.
Then they all contribute. And if you don't have the self-control to put your devices down, or you're not helping your children with that, then that cycle can continue and you go, well, I'm wide awake. What else am I going to fill my time in with? Oh, devices. And that cycle keeps going.
Yep.
And then people would get woken up by notifications in the middle of the night.
Mm.
Really, at least if you're going to have it in your room, put it on night mode.
Turn it off.
Yes,
yeah.
Turn it off.
Yeah. So even there's like a handful tip.
Yeah.
Like I know for an iPhone, for example, not sure about Android, but iPhone, you can preset every night that quiet mode turns on at a certain time and turn off at a certain time.
Mm.
And even if we're, say if we're starting that, we have, you know, very little self-control in these areas.
Yep.
You know, self-control is a muscle, right? So you can, it doesn't matter where you start. If you just start somewhere building it.
Yep.
Putting in little boundaries like this can help.
Yeah.
Kind of get us the ball rolling into sleep.
Mm. And even earlier is good. And not having in your room overnight.
Okay.
So getting a normal alarm clock.
Lots of
people have forgotten what they look like.
Yeah, so I have to buy
both
one.
Both my girls going through school had a normal alarm clock. Emma's in year 12, so she still has that. Phone goes out of the room.
Yeah.
And even some schools are starting to give away normal alarms for students signing that they won't have their phone in their room.
Wow.
Because at the end of the day,
it's an addiction.
It's the whole world of information sitting in your head.
Yeah, wow.
Even if you've got it on night mode, every bit of information from the world is there in your room.
Yeah, and it's
so that can even be a stimulus in your
hard
in
to turn
itself.
Off night mode.
Yeah. Just having it sitting by there is a trigger, even if you're not on it.
Yes.
It can be a trigger if you're finding it challenging to fall asleep, or you wake up in the middle of the night and there's your phone. It's like last thing you're on your phone for was an email or something like that. So it's just a trigger even seeing your phone.
Okay. So so phone's a big one.
Phone's a big one.
TV's more about what you're watching and then
how close to sleep. Because the TV's a little further away so that
light's
not going straight in. So it's more about the content.
What about bringing a TV into your bed or bedroom?
Different research around that. Personally, I think... Well, there's a saying that just says keep your bedroom for sleep and sex only. So it's really just so that you're associating your bedroom just with sleeping.
Yes.
Whereas we often work, particularly during COVID, people were working.
Yeah.
You see kids studying on the bed, and then it just has an association that bed is not just for sleep.
Okay.
So if your brain
is
having trouble sleeping, then you've got to keep that bed association purely for sleeping.
Okay. So what are some of the signs of sleep deprivation? Because I think some of us could be experiencing these and not even know it.
Yep.
Because it seems so normal. And like you said, even a part of our culture, is this possibly a Western culture thing, is it's like a badge of honor that, I only need 5 hours sleep.
Yes,
totally. You know, but.
Yeah.
So we might be actively not acknowledging these symptoms.
Yep. Firstly, our habits. If you are finding it hard to get up in the morning.
Yep.
Or you need a massive sleeping on the weekend. Tyler goes, should I be so lucky with a young child?
No.
but if you're needing that big sleeping on the weekend, it's a sure sign that you're not getting enough sleep during those 5 days a week to be the best version of yourselves.
Okay.
So particularly if you've got children and teenagers and they're constantly needing a big sleep in, you go, okay what's going on there?
Red flag there, yeah.
Red flag, yep. Also increased use of caffeine and energy drinks, and just general procrastination, like I can't be stuffed. So that's sort of under habits. And then in terms of our emotions, we've talked about that. If you're starting to feel more anxious, overwhelmed, and, you know, anxiety and depression is a two-way thing with sleep.
Yes.
Overwhelmed. And then in terms of our brain function, if we're just not feeling as decisive, able to take information on board, creative, all those things that I was speaking about. And then lastly, our physical side, just that low energy, yawning, just less likely to exercise, because one of the best things you can do for a great night's sleep is exercise. So really those four areas to do with your habits, your emotions, your brain function and your physical health.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what was the economic impact you said?
$50 billion a year. So some of that's on lost productivity and others it's health and well-being.
That's amazing. I mean, I don't know how they calculate that amount, but... Even like in preparing for this podcast and seeing stats like that, I thought every boss,
yes,
this is in the interest of every manager, every boss,
yep,
every leader. Because if they, often when we think, okay, how can I increase productivity for my team?
Yep.
I doubt we're looking at sleep of my team.
Yep.
We're probably looking
it is
at
shifting
workflows and structures and this and that. And but so if you're listening to this and you're a leader, like to look at a person holistically and think, oh, okay, actually, could I speak into my team's world in their sleep and give some suggestions there or give some help? Okay, so that's signs of sleep deprivation.
Yep.
Give us some like sleep tips. How can we, I know you've already hit a few.
Yep, great. So firstly, know how many hours sleep are recommended.
Yep.
So for adults, it's around 7 to 9.
Okay.
Teenagers, 8 to 10.
Yep.
Maybe primary school, the range of 9 to 11, depending on how old they are, and then babies different. But I can put in the show notes just a link to the recommended hours of sleep across the lifespan. So know how many hours you need. Or there are some people who need less, so we do have
some outliers.
Outliers.
Yes.
And we were talking about that earlier, just can some people get away with less sleep? So they can.
Oh.
But that's only about 1% to 3% of the population.
Okay.
And it's thought to be genetic. So firstly, know how many hours of sleep you need and start to prioritise it. So it's the most basic thing in the world, but actually planning for it. So most people, all these things are going on in the world, and what they do doesn't add up to 24 hours, and the first place they take their time from is their sleep.
Yes.
So it's just that prioritising for all members of your family and just what time do I need to wake up, move it backwards. It's really basic. And also just looking at what your motivation would be. So particularly if you've got children, go through, I'll cover off just say 10 tips, but go through as a family, just do a sleep diary as a family. And if you're I'm part of a family, then have a great friend who you can be accountable and just go, am I getting enough sleep?
Yeah.
If not, what's stopping me? And so actually have that conversation as a whole family after you've done a sleep diary and start to help each other. So, yeah, basically number one would be planning your sleep. Focus on time management, even just having a timetable as a family, particularly for your children.
Great.
Look at how many hours are at school, traveling to school, then put sleep in third. Don't do it the other way around and put all activities in and then shove sleep on the end. Actually plan, help your children plan. There's so much going on in their worlds. Having a break, as we said before, between your devices and having a technology-free zone.
Yeah, before you go to sleep. Consistent, you said at least half an hour, hey?
Yeah, for adults, half an hour. For your younger children, a good 1 to 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's good. Or your primary school and younger. Having a consistent bedtime and weekends. So when I say that to older teenagers, I can see them looking at me. I go, yes, you need to have a life. You need to go out to parties. You need to enjoy yourselves.
As much as possible, yeah.
But your body clock loves consistency.
Yes.
So if I go around and look at some teenagers' sleep diaries, I'll see them sleeping until 10, 11 o'clock on a weekend. And then come Monday morning, they're getting up 4 hours earlier. And I say, that's called social jet lag. You could have flown to Fiji and woken up in a beautiful place, but you're at school and your body clock's confused.
Social jet lag.
Yes.
Wow.
So you're at school going, your body clock's going, what the heck? So try and keep it within 1 to 2 hours, week to weekends.
Okay.
Whilst enjoying yourself at the same time.
Yep.
Setting aside thinking and planning time, which is really key. So a lot of the reason that people can't fall asleep, and you alluded to this before, is keep going all night. And then the first time we have stopped all day is when we put our head on the pillow and then all these thoughts come to our brain. And you're dealing with that by that time, your logical part of your brain, your logical part switched off, and all you're doing is using your emotional part of the brain. So you start ruminating.
Spiraling.
Yes. Why am I even thinking like that? That's crazy.
God, yeah, yeah.
So set aside some thinking and planning time. And I heard it called yesterday on a podcast, productive worry time. So set it aside.
This could be
5 minutes
journaling,
in the afternoon.
This could be, yeah.
So what am I concerned about?
Yeah, good.
What am I going to do about it?
Because that also that activity gets it from your head.
Totally.
Onto paper.
Yep.
Which really helps declutter.
Very much.
Mentally. Yep.
So help your children do it as well. It's really great for us as adults because all this stuff's going around in your brain. So get your children to do that because sometimes they're just worried about stuff and it might be a friend, have a chat. What are you going to do about it? Who are you going to talk to?
Get
have some outcome. Yep. And as you said, have a pen and paper as well beside your bed. So I always do because if something pops up, then rather than trying to hang on to that till the morning, just write it down, it's gone.
And the fear that you'll forget in the morning.
Yes, totally. Yes. Write it down. Sometimes I don't even turn a light on, I just write it on my arm and hope I can decipher it in the morning.
Scribbles.
Yeah. So setting that and having a wind down period. So thinking and planning time way before bed, like in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Having that wind down period, not thinking that we can just go to bed and switch that brain off. Exercise is one of the best things that we can do for great quality sleep. Some people it's not great just before bedtime, but exercising daily, great quality sleep.
Mm.
Naps, so some people take naps. Do you ever get to have a nap?
I used to be a big napper.
Yeah. Men are so much better at it.
During uni, like, but I'm quite religious with my naps.
Yep.
Like 20 minutes, that's it.
See, you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because if I go into deep sleep, then I feel like I've been drugged.
Yep. So that's a really great point. So I'll give you a nap tip so you already know them, but for the audience. So if you're going to have an afternoon nap, have it for 20 or 30 minutes only. Because as you said, if you go longer, you end up in your deep sleep zone and you feel drugged.
Groggy, yeah.
Or if you really need to, you've got some massive catch up, do an hour and a half so you go through all your sleep cycles and you come out at your light sleep. But don't do it too close to bedtime because you want the nice sleep pressure at the end. So lots of teenagers have their afternoon nap. Snooze alarm, can't believe how many people have their snooze alarm going off for 30 or 40 minutes. I'm like, that's called silly.
That's a big no-no, is it?
Add that 30 or 40 minutes to your sleep. Otherwise, you're just getting dragged in and out of your sleep. So add that time to your sleep so that you're getting a great quality sleep and then just have a five-minute backup.
Yep.
Don't do the drag in and out of sleep.
Yeah.
Alcohol and coffee, we've talked a little bit about. So just recognising that we often use alcohol to relax. So I did a session with some staff a while ago where we were talking about general well-being, positive ways, negative ways of supporting our stress levels. So exercise, obviously positive.
Yes.
Within about 1 second, people said alcohol.
Yes.
So just recognising that, yes, it might relax you to go to sleep, but what it does is it impacts your quality of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So your REM sleep and your deep sleep, which we didn't talk about earlier, but it impacts your quality of sleep. So you go, but I was asleep for 8 hours, but it wasn't quality sleep. So just really be aware of that. Caffeine, just recognise the impact of caffeine. So it has a half-life of 6 or so hours. And then that can accumulate. So you think, well, I didn't have my coffee for a while, so it just stays in your system for a long time. And also just be aware of the wired, not even keeping you awake, but sometimes caffeine can make you a bit anxious. So it's just...
Yes. Yeah, I've definitely found caffeine is very different person to person.
Totally.
Some people cannot touch it after 1 p.m.
Yep.
Some people cannot touch it at all because how it interacts with their stress levels.
Yes.
And then my grandma will love a nightcap at 10 p.m.
Just have a shot of caffeine. I'm like, what?
So I don't know what's going on there, but.
Yes. So be aware of your own susceptibility.
Yes.
And then lastly and importantly, seek help if you're concerned about your sleep. So if after looking at some of these tips, and I'll put some other notes in the show notes, because some people will be going, I know all these tips, I'm doing those, but I'm still struggling.
Yeah.
One thing I would say to them is just recognize that sleep is not just a nighttime affliction. So what I mean by that is we can be doing the no caffeine, alcohol, technology. We can be doing all the tips but still be going, but I'm still waking up. So recognising why you might be waking up, looking into that. But recognising, as I said, that sleep's not just a nighttime affliction. So everything that's going on during your day, if you've got high levels of stress during the day, because we're not at the end of the day supposed to be leading the lifestyle that we're leading. So we're supposed to have that fright or flight every now and then, but we're living in
Not constantly.
Yeah. And so your cortisol levels fight your melatonin levels. So if you've got too high cortisol, then that fights you being able to fall asleep. It does the good old 3 o'clock wake up. There's a lot more detail, so I'll give some other little tips to that, because I know some people will leave this going, I'm so frustrated, I'm still having challenges.
I've tried everything. Yeah.
So I would say if you have, and once you've listened to some of the other little bites that I can send through in links, if either you're finding it challenging falling asleep or waking up, and go and seek help. Or if you are getting that 8 or 9 hours of sleep but you don't feel refreshed the next day, go and get help.
Figure it could out where be the quality your quality.
It could be sleep apnea, it could be low iron levels, it could be anything impacting.
Okay, and so say for example you find yourself awake at like 3 in the morning.
Yep.
What do you do?
So it's a really common question.
Mm-hmm.
So firstly, we've got to look at why you might be awake at 3 o'clock in the morning. So if it's a long-term thing, then need to look at, is it stress? Is it a sleep disorder? What actually is it? So we get to the bottom of that.
Yep.
But if you do suddenly wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, don't stress, because that immediately flips your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was saying before, often the logical part of your brain is died down. And so you're just going, oh my gosh, I'm awake. So don't worry about it. For me, I will read. So I've got a little tiny little clip-on orange lamp because I fall asleep quite easily and I'm reading. So I'll associate reading with, okay, just read for 5 or 10 minutes. What experts do say is if you've been awake for longer than, say, 15 minutes, don't keep lying there. So get up, go and do something quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard of someone who said she went and did the housework, and I went, yeah, no, don't do that. So do something quiet. So it doesn't even have to be out of your room. It could be just sitting in a chair or just sitting in a chair nearby, just reading, listening to some music, doing something quiet. So as I inferred during the session, we need to associate bed with the time that you're asleep. So the more time that you're awake in bed, then your bed starts to associate bed with actually a frustrating place.
Yes.
So after 15 minutes, get
out of there.
Get out of bed and then come back and give sleep another try.
Yep.
And then do that again. The other key thing that we were talking about is if things are going through your mind, write them down just to get rid of that. So it's really just finding something relaxing. So it could be some music. It could be, even if you're in your bed, just a body scan, just something mindful.
Yep.
Don't let your brain go to all these things. You've got to be really proactive
in
not letting your brain go to the things that you're concerned about. Just going, I've dealt with that before I went to sleep. We'll work that out in the morning.
Yep.
Just don't let your brain go to those places. Yeah. So that will be the key one.
Okay.
Yep.
Brilliant. Okay, now to finish, some rapid fire questions.
Why? I thought I was nearly done.
You are nearly done after this. Okay, so Lisa, what time do you go to bed?
So I aim to be in bed by 10 o'clock.
Okay.
Yep.
Very sensible.
Yes.
Okay, and when do you stop drinking coffee?
If I do drink coffee, I'll only have one latest 10 o'clock in the morning, but that's just me personally.
Yep, that's good. And what is your wind down, your nighttime routine?
My wind down, so I enjoy exercising, so quiet walk in the evening is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes reading my Bible and key for me is watching some sort of comedy.
Brilliant.
Yes.
And final question, burning. This one's burning for me.
Oh, okay.
Are you a back, front or side sleeper?
Oh, I think we all do all.
But really?
Side.
Ooh, controversial opinion.
Back and side.
Back and side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm a stomach sleeper and it's the worst.
It's making snore.
Not yet, thankfully. Oh, good. And for anyone, if you know, the go-to is to try these sleep tips first, but if people are finding they're just still not finding breakthrough or the quality of sleep is still not there, who's some like professionals they could go to seek further help?
Great question. So there are online options. So if you're having that trouble, insomnia or that waking up, there are some online options such as one called Sleepio.
Yep.
For children and teens, there's Sleep Shack where they actually look at the details of your child's sleep. But, of course, face-to-face appointments. So there are sleep psychologists and sleep specialists around. Often people don't even know that they exist. So if you need that, then go via your GP.
Yep.
Your GP, some of them are fantastic with sleep and will be able to give you some great tips.
Mm-hmm.
Others haven't done that much sleep training, so often they'll refer you, or sometimes the first port of call is a sleeping tablet.
Right.
But we want to get to the bottom of why you're not sleeping, not just put a Band-Aid solution on.
Yes.
Yep.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been very practical, which I think is great. Can really land in people's lives.
Yep.
And if you want to read any more from the Sleep Connection, we're going to have a whole bunch of stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, wonderful.
And chat again soon.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you.